Good day. My name is Michelle, and welcome to Nova's Business Report. And on the Market Watch today, I have Theo Klein again. I spoke to him last week, and we ran out of time. We had so much more to talk about on the latest economic outlook that they have on different Africa countries. So we've decided today to pick up on that again. And as you might know, on the DRC, there's been this agreement with the US. And Theo, maybe just let's start off with the DRC. What does that agreement exactly entail? And tell us a little bit about your outlook on the DRC.
Yes, thanks, Michelle. So we actually still think that the conflict between Rwanda and the DRC will continue. We do not see the M23 rebel group sort of slowing down. This is only because and this is despite the recent agreement that's been signed or brokered by the US, as you've mentioned. This is only because there have been such agreements made in the past, also ceasefire agreements, but then, you know, we've still seen conflict continuing after that. We haven't seen any promise from both sides, or especially from the M23, to really adhere to that ceasefire agreement. This is a long-standing power struggle for land, or a land grab struggle, I should rather say, Michelle, where, you know, we have to take note of the fact that Rwanda feels that after the European colonial powers left, they arbitrarily drew borders of the new Rwanda, making the modern-day Rwanda much smaller than what it was before colonial powers seized the land. So the Rwandan authorities just feel that the eastern DRC should be part of the Rwanda, because that's how it was many, many years ago. And and they want that land part of their country again. The other reason is that that area is rich in mineral resources. And Rwanda also just feels that that should then be part of the economy. That's where all of this conflict is coming from.
Yeah, maybe if I can just ask you this. So this ceasefire brokered by the US, and as you now say, they've tried in the past. What was in the deal for the US as part of the proposal?
I think the incentive for the US in this, Michelle, is that they, if I can maybe just take one step back, we see very weak governance in the DRC. So we also don't, Rwanda is just a lot more efficient at managing the economy. So if Rwanda gains control over those mines in the eastern DRC, there'll be a lot more production of those critical minerals from in that region that are typically used for renewable energy technology and so forth. So I think the incentive for the US is that they also have deals with Rwanda, as they also buy some of the minerals coming out of the eastern DRC, amongst many other international countries such as the UAE and China and so forth, and even some European countries as well.
Yeah, so they claim that they've been successful in brokering this arrangement, but now you say the conflict will continue. So how does that work?
I'm not entirely too sure, Michelle. I think the way I see it is that the US will still want those minerals out of the DRC, and they believe Rwanda is better at getting those minerals out of the ground much faster than what the locals could do it. So I'm not entirely too sure what that could look like. On paper, it just looks good for the US to be able to say that they've been able to help these two parties come to an agreement. But if that agreement isn't credible, if it's not addressing the core issues that the Rwandans have, then it's not going to last very long. So I think at the end of the day, the US will have to shrug its shoulders and say, listen, we tried, it didn't work. But, you know, in the meantime, they still get the minerals. So I think that's sort of more or less how I see it. I think in this case, Michelle, we see that conflict is actually a positive, or could benefit the Rwandan economy, because as the M23 rebel group gain more ground and mines in the eastern part of the DRC, that is funneled through Rwanda. So they actually benefit from selling these minerals to international markets, and that could then benefit their government's finances and also artificially boost their exports, but then also their foreign currency earnings. So in this case, it's actually a positive for Rwanda, but also for Uganda, because Uganda is also guilty of looting a lot of gold out of the eastern part of DRC. And you typically see it in Uganda statistics that the gold production from their mines and the gold exports, that data does not speak to one another. It's there's a lot of inconsistencies, and the exports are much higher. So that's also where the UN has discovered that Uganda is definitely looting gold out of the eastern part of the DRC.
How does this affect relations between Uganda and Rwanda?
So, funny enough, Uganda publicly, or at least their president, publicly says that he supports the DRC, he stands behind them, but he also enjoys, you know, having good relations with Rwanda. But if a full-out war has to break out in the region, then it's likely for Uganda to actually support the army in the DRC. So they would then actually fight against Rwanda. But knowing that Rwanda, and that's only because the Uganda has closer ties with the DRC than Rwanda. But knowing that Rwanda has the most advanced and well-equipped army in Africa, and their borders are very well-weaponized, Uganda would not want to fight against Rwanda. But if push comes to shove, then that's how we see the alliances being drawn. We also expect then Kenya and Tanzania to stand behind the DRC, also because of longstanding ties. So, but I mean, Rwanda is quite strong on its own. Like I said, it has the most advanced and most weaponized army in Africa.
So it sounds like this small little country called Rwanda is like an island between, you know, various neighbors not being on their side. Maybe how has this now impacted your economic outlook then for that region?
Yes. So we've actually lowered our real economic growth forecast for Rwanda this year. We initially had it at about 7.5%, and now we've reduced it to 6.9%. But that's also mainly because of indirect effects. So tourism is a very important sector for Rwanda because it's the number one generator of foreign currency for the government. And that's very important because Rwanda relies very heavily on external loans denominated in US dollars to finance its development agenda. So it needs foreign currencies to repay that external or foreign debt for the government. And we expect tourism inflows to deteriorate this year as a result of fears over the war or just general conflict. And we also then see that we expect below average rainfall in the first half of this year to have weighed on agricultural output, also a very key sector for Rwanda. We've also seen other Eastern African countries, not formally putting trade restrictions in place, but sort of discouraging local businesses to buy Rwandan products. And that's also very important because East African countries is the second biggest export market for Rwanda after the UAE. So if those other neighboring countries buy less from them, then that will also weigh heavily on their manufacturing output, but also export growth. So, but with that said, Michelle, the minerals that it steals from the DRC and sells to the UAE, amongst other countries, that is actually still a positive for Rwanda.
Let's get to the outlook on the DRC. Do you do that as well?
I do, Michelle, but I unfortunately don't have those numbers with me at the moment. But all in all, the outlook is fairly negative because of, like I said earlier, weak governance, just not poor management of the economy, and the DRC has reached out to international partners, but they've not really come to the fore to support them against Rwanda. I think the overall outlook there would be fairly negative.
Okay. So maybe if we can get to three other countries that you've mentioned that you've also done an economic outlook on. It's yes. Mali, Niger, and Libya. Maybe give us a feel for the western side of the continent.
Yes, certainly. So recently, at the start of the year, Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali have left the regional economic bloc, ECOWAS. And that's only because of years of frustration of low economic growth. And then also those countries feeling that the regional economic bloc isn't doing much for their countries. So they've left the bloc, and they have also in recent months indicated that they're actually keen to leave the currency peg. So those West African countries use the West CFA franc that is pegged to the euro. And then where France, who used to be their colonial power, still has a lot of influence in the region. For example, the regional central bank still holds its reserves with the treasury in Paris, where they, the French authorities, then still manage their foreign currencies. And these three countries that I've mentioned are sort of fed up with French influence, and that's why they've left. And more recently, in the last 2 weeks, we've actually seen Mali, the military government that has not taken over, they've actually seized a gold mine from a Canadian company. Military authorities in Niger have also taken over control of a uranium mine from a French firm. And this also just once again speaks to their anti-West sentiment, where these military leaders actually favor stronger relations with Russia and Turkey, amongst other Middle East and Asian partners. So as a result of that, we actually expect weak investment inflows from Western countries into these West African countries of Mali and Niger. And we expect then them to rely more heavily on investment inflows from their Eastern partners. But despite that, we expect an increase in oil output to still support overall economic growth, as well as very high cocoa prices and just general good agricultural production as well. So we still expect very high growth of 7.8% for Niger in this year, and then 4.4% in Mali. But like I said, very bad relations between these countries and the West at the moment. And then if you look at Libya, we still see ongoing tensions between the Eastern government and the Western government. Still pretty much a power struggle and a loss in trust of certain supporters and fears of them wanting to seize control. And then that leads to conflict. And what's negative for Libya for this is that this internal conflict typically leads to a halt in oil production, where they sort of prevent workers from going to oil fields, or they block the ports that are exporting oil products. And then this is negative because oil production it dominates Libya's export basket, and it accounts for over 95% of the government's revenue. So if anything reduces oil production, it's very negative for the government's finances. And then obviously that spills over to other sectors as well.
Can you give me an insight as to the effect of the current low, sort of almost persistent low oil price? I mean, surely that must be affecting Libya then and all other oil producing countries in Africa quite severely.
Yes, no, certainly. We've also seen, Michelle, or we've calculated the benchmark, the break-even oil price for some of these countries. And it's crazy to think that it ranges between 80 and 120 US dollar per barrel for some of these countries. And obviously, with oil prices being where they are, it's far below their break-even price. And we expect continued oil price weakness, especially OPEC, that recently announced that they plan to increase output further in August and September. So that will just add even more downward pressure to global oil prices, which is good for consumers in terms of inflation, but obviously bad for Libya and other oil-producing countries. So we definitely expect that to also weigh on Libya's economic outlook going forward. And Libya's economy is really not well diversified. Besides oil, there's really not that much supporting business activity, especially with regards to food. Libya imports over 60% of its annual food requirement because it has a very small local agricultural industry. So then it needs those foreign currency earnings from its oil exports to pay for its food imports. So that is also a major risk for Libya.
Yeah,
I think we should
last time as well that you know the importance of a diversified economy. Yes, maybe a last thought from your side.
I think maybe just to quickly touch on the Sudan war again. I know we briefly spoke about it last week, but you know that war's now been going on for more than 2 years. And still isn't showing signs of ending anytime soon. Funny enough, the rebel military group controls a lot of gold mines, and gold prices being at historic highs at the moment is actually benefiting their finances. So that's still keeping the rebel military group quite strong. And funny enough, they're also selling their gold, most of it, to the UAE. There we've seen over 3 million people leaving Sudan, typically going to neighboring countries such as South Sudan, Chad, and Uganda. And then that also places a strain on those governments' finances as they have to increase their humanitarian aid with all these refugees fleeing to their countries. And what's also quite interesting is that South Sudan relies heavily on oil. And they ship their oil through Sudan with a pipeline that goes through Sudan and to one of their ports. And the ongoing war in Sudan has actually prevented this pipeline from working properly. They damaged it last year, February, and it was only fixed towards the end of last year. And now South Sudan is looking at building another pipeline going through Ethiopia to reach the ports in Djibouti so that they can export oil rather through those more stable countries. But be it as it may, I think the economic outlook is still very poor for both these countries. We still expect the economies to contract. Sudan, we're looking at a contraction of 2.1%, for example. And I think, you know, once again, it's just over-reliance on oil in South Sudan. But then the war in Sudan, that's not... It will take years for that country to recover the economic losses as a result of the war. So, and that's also once again just rooted in long-standing ethnic tensions and power struggles over the country that's causing the war. So I think, Michelle, with all of that, I'll just conclude to say that, you know, at least in Namibia, we don't have internal conflicts or wars going on. Our government is at least stable, albeit maybe inefficient and not always doing what we would want it to do. But then at least, you know, it's stable. And then, of course, Namibia is also still operating fairly well with its SADC and SALCU members, or partners rather. So at least we don't have these political tensions and conflict risks weighing on the economic growth outlook for the Southern African area. I think, obviously... what will slow down business activity this year is just a moderation in consumer spending due to elevated living costs and high interest rates, but then also more importantly, weaker commodity prices, especially uranium, diamonds, zinc and copper prices that will weigh on Southern Africa. I mean, we've already seen dire effects of weak diamond prices in Botswana, where the government did not even have enough money to pay salaries last month. And I think, so that could still also be a risk for Namibia. But like I said, at least one positive thing for Namibians is that we don't have these major tensions wars and conflict that's going on.
Yes, exactly. No, definitely to be thankful for. And Africa's got so much potential. Just listening to you, one wonders what the continent will all be able to achieve if it was just, you know, governed correctly. Thank you very much, Theo, for your insights. Today was a good and an in-depth session, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.